energy prices are rising. The most noticeable price increase is gasoline. Prices at the pump are at least a dollar more than at this time a year ago. Home heating oil prices are up too. One survey said that those that heat with oil can expect to pay $500 more this winter. Natural gas prices have increased substantially as well. Propane is the fuel set to rise the most. Why is the cost of energy up so much, and will it continue? Joining us today is Mike Butler. He's the Mid-Atlantic Director of the Consumer Energy Alliance. Mr. Butler, welcome to the program. Start with that basic question. Why are energy prices up so much?
Well, thanks, Scott. It's good to be here with you today. Unfortunately, energy prices are rising, and it's a combination of factors. The biggest factor remains that the world economy and the American economy is still coming out of COVID. The pandemic shut down energy production limited energy production for over a year. And it's not like flipping a switch to get all that production ramped back up to meet the surge of demand. So it's gonna take a while for that to right-size itself. Similar to the supply chain disruption we're seeing, there's just a backlog of energy supply, and demand is surging, and that's the biggest culprit right now in driving these energy prices.
When we say demand is surging, what in particular do we mean by that? I mean, I've heard scenarios of, many people were vaccinated, they wanted to get out, they started driving more, more businesses were open, using more energy. I mean, is that what you're describing with the demand as we come out of COVID?
Yes, that's exactly right. As people resume their normal lives after being, a year or so, not just the United States, but around the world, being shut in and limited in their movements and not going to work and not doing the same type of traveling, either work-related or personal vacation travel, all of the above, just really ratcheted down how much energy people were consuming. And so energy producers had to take that into account. They had to scale back their production, and now it's really surging. And it's not a flip of the switch. You just can't the very next day have as much energy being produced and distributed around the world as you need at that moment. And so that's the biggest culprit that's driving this. There are others that have brought us here today. I mean, in the United States in particular, there's been a shortage of building out some of the energy infrastructure we need to meet. Even if you were to take COVID aside, there are a lot of energy projects that have been stymied that really could have helped alleviate the situation. But the time has come and passed, and now they're not online to help us through this.
Are you referring to Keystone XL?
Pipelines in general. I mean, just in Pennsylvania, like the PennEast pipeline between Pennsylvania and New Jersey, for example. So there are any number of other energy infrastructure projects we could talk about, reducing our nuclear capacity over the last few decades. I mean, there are a number of factors that have gotten us into this predicament.
There are some who, let's face it, because everyone is impacted by higher energy prices, there are many opinions out there as to why it is happening. One thing that we have heard is that the transition from from fossil fuels to alternative, I hate to even say alternative energies, but to renewable energies like solar or wind, that's one of the reasons that prices have gone up. Solar and wind, for example, those renewable energies aren't widespread yet. We are making moves where those two types of renewable energies would supply more energy, but today that's not the case. So is that a factor?
Sure. The good news is the United States is the second largest producer of wind and solar in the world. So we've made great strides in growing our renewable capacity. But as you alluded to, they're too small of a fraction of our entire energy production to carry the load. We just don't have enough, particularly battery storage, to weather when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing. So it's very hard to get to renewables at the capacity an economy like ours would need. So they're part of the mix that's important, but they're not going to be part of the immediate solution over the next year or so as we try to get ourselves out of this energy crunch.
When will they be part of the solution? And maybe not just the solution to these particular rising prices, but I see that your organization represents some solar and wind energy.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we are in all of the above as the policy we believe in. We think that that's best for consumers if there are many different energy sources competing with one another, so people have the best prices and the most affordable and reliable options. But it's very hard to say what that timeline is. Looking into the crystal ball, you see some of the things that are happening around the world that have gone more aggressive to renewables, like let's say what's happening in Germany, even in the United States, what's happening in California. I think the biggest question is that battery, the question of battery storage. Will we ever have enough to enable wind and solar to take another giant step forward? Without that, you just don't have the reliability. And that becomes very damaging if consumers, manufacturers, hospitals, households can't count on their energy being there when they need it. So that's kind of the big technological question. And it's also important to keep in mind that because they're intermittent sources of energy, that you always have to have corresponding baseload power. So as you increase wind and solar, which will increase in the years to come, you also need to increase your baseload capacity. So, we like to say that they're better together. You know, natural gas and solar, natural gas and wind are actually great complements to one another. And as you grow your renewables, you'll be growing some baseload capacity as well. And the United States is really well situated to take advantage of both those dynamics.
Yeah, and I mean, we should point out that Consumer Energy Alliance, you say that you advocate for consumer, advocate for energy, bringing together families, farmers, small businesses, distributors, producers, and manufacturers to support America's environmentally sustainable energy future. You not only represent some renewable energies, but also some fossil fuel energy interest as well, as we just talked about pipelines and even natural gas. So how do you kind of rectify the two?
Well, again, for us, it's, as I kind of alluded to, it's not really rectifying the two because they are more complements than maybe our politics suggest. Until you have that battery capacity ramped up, you need the corresponding baseload power. So when the sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow, you've got energy that is on the grid that you can utilize. So as we grow our renewable footprint, we have to grow our corresponding footprint, which is either natural gas or nuclear, hydro, what have you, combination of all of the above. That's just the reality for the foreseeable future. But for us, we're a consumer-oriented organization, so we're always looking at what is best for the consumer. And for us, if I could put us down on to just a bumper sticker, it's about affordability and reliability. So anytime there's a potential legislation or regulation or project, we always look at it, what will this mean for affordability and reliability? And that's how we gauge the merits of those proposals.
I'm jumping around on you here, but one of the big questions I'm sure many in our audience have today is, all right, we've seen the rise in prices due to supply and demand and the energy producers not producing as much as, as quickly as what many would like. Down the road, when can we see these prices drop or at least become stable?
I wish I had better news there. At least as of right now, it seems like we may have an early and cold winter. Hard winter months jack up heating needs, which rises, increases demand, which increases energy prices. So unfortunately, I foresee us having a very rough next few months. I mean, I can't say exactly when I see us stabilizing on energy prices, but everything we're seeing right now, we're months and months away. It may not be till the spring or summer till we see prices that are a little more to what we're accustomed to.
A barrel of oil last week went for $80 a barrel on the market. It was like $40 last year. I seem to remember that it priced out a few years ago at $100 a barrel. Will we approach those kind of numbers?
Yeah, you hit. I mean, it's over 80. I mean, it's the highest it's been in 7 years. There's no reason to see that slow down in the very near term. Not sure if we'll get all the way to cross $100 again it kind of feels that way. I, you know, the Biden administration is trying to negotiate with OPEC to produce more to help out those price points. Again, it's kind of got to earlier, you know, it's a shame with how much energy, particularly natural gas and oil that we produce in the United States, that we're still in a circumstance where we have to bargain and beg with OPEC, but that's where we are right now to try to keep those prices from getting much higher. But it's hard to say that they, I mean, I'm sure they're going to keep increasing. Don't know how high that increase will continue to be.
Now, just to point out, this is not just an American issue. This is a worldwide issue. I mean,
absolutely,
Britain, Europe, China, especially with natural gas. I mean, they're talking about rolling blackouts in China as a result of not having as much energy. So, again, this is a worldwide issue. What can the Biden administration do, if anything?
Well, in the short term, that's kind of what's most unfortunate is there's not a lot to turn around what it looks like it's going to be, what the case looks like it's going to be the next few months. In the longer term, it's building out your energy infrastructure. There's a great opportunity, and I just don't mean pipelines as we alluded to earlier. I mean all of it. We need to be building all of it, and his agenda is Build Back Better. That build is the first B. So there's technology to be invested in. I know part of what the holdup in the spending bill is Senator Manchin is trying to dig in for more technology on carbon capture than maybe some of the other more progressive wings of the Democrats want. They would like to see us get more just renewable. I think Senator Manchin's on to something that carbon capture could open up incredibly exciting possibilities for the country. Again, we're the world's largest producer of natural gas and oil. To be able to continue to improve our environment, the United States has made great strides. We've reduced our emissions more than any country in the world. To continue that progress with something like carbon capture or other technological breakthroughs, I think those are the right types of investments. But again, none of that will help out in the next 6 months.
You know, one of the things that's happened during this period of the last few months when prices have gone up is that, when you talk about carbon capture and West Virginia, where Senator Manchin hails from, obviously a big coal state, the price of coal has gone up a lot. Plus, the use of coal, it is being used more in the past couple months as well. And obviously, that doesn't help the environment.
And that's what's kind of most frustrating about some of the more aggressive environmental policies is because the renewables aren't where they want them to be or hope for them to be. You have to get power and energy from somewhere, and coal is still incredibly abundant. It's still quite affordable. And so that becomes a resource. If you block a natural gas pipeline and you don't have the renewable capacity, coal is the only thing you have to turn to. And, especially when you talk about globally, China, India, these developing nations, they don't have anywhere near the environmental standards that we have. So when they turn to coal, it really creates just devastating consequences to the environmental progress we're all striving to make. So sometimes you got to be more practical about things and just take simply the best options available to you at the time and not the option you most hope would be there at the time.
Are you saying that the use of coal, the increased use of coal, is justified then?
Well, I think it's the only thing that's going to happen. I think the more justifiable use would be to use more natural gas, which has been the biggest displacer of coal. But I'm just saying, if you take away all the other options, people are going to they're not going to reduce their energy consumption. They have to get it from somewhere. It's just unfortunate that there are cleaner alternatives to coal that are being stymied, and then you're trying to make this amount of progress and people are going to resort to something. And unfortunately, what's cheap and abundant is coal. And it's cheap and abundant to countries with very little environmental standards like China.
Mm-hmm. So what can consumers do?
Well, in the short term, I think you have to do things. If you go on our website, consumerenergyalliance.org, we have some tips for drivers, for example, tips for homeowners, things you can do to try to minimize the pain you feel at the pump or on your utility bills, things like from carpooling to work or not riding the brakes as much, keeping your tires and your air better inflated, all things that get you better gas mileage to try to save money as best you can. If you're going out, if you have a lot of errands to run, do one big trip instead of a number of small trips. Just little tips to try to save a few bucks where you can.
What about for heating, home heating?
Same. We have a great kind of tip sheet on home heating. Things like using blinds to keep the energy in of how you utilize the sunlight your home may get. Place setting, keep your air conditioning or heating on to try to save a few dollars. There are little tips you can do that add up over time. But as the prices keep surging, it's won't be quite as beneficial as it is in years past, but it ought to help out a little bit.
Mike Butler is the Mid-Atlantic Director of the Consumer Energy Alliance. Mike, thank you very much for being with us today.
Scott, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.